ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
It's Sunday.
Sunday and I'm sleepy. Hold on, let me go shut that door again.
Yeah, Pookie keeps coming in here and, like, busting the door.
She's very hyperactive today.
Yeah, for some reason, we were talking about it last night. Maybe it's because we ran out of Temptations and we haven't gone to the store to get any more yet, and we're giving her some of the other ones, and I think she's mad about it. Because, man, she's, before we turn the show on, she kept jumping up here and trying to, like,
biting on things,
biting all the cords and shit like that. I'm like, don't make me spray you with lemon juice, because I will.
She keeps running up to me when I'm up on a bed watching TV, gets up on top of the nightstand and pulls things off, throws them. And I can hear her sliding something across, you know, remotes and stuff, and I'll look like that and she'll freeze going, I'm not moving it. And then you look away.
I'm just standing here like normal.
Yeah, yeah.
I told her, it was like, it's really, really funny. Like, when she wants to get your attention, she's like, the nightstand, you know, there's, like, stuff on it. And you'll see, like, her little ears poke up on the far side of the nightstand, and then her little paw comes up, and she grabs it, and it starts to slide.
Yeah. She's got hands. She uses hands. It's fucking ridiculous. I've never seen a cat use hands like that. She just thinks she's a monkey.
Oh, she definitely does.
Fingers extended, and she'll grab something and start sliding it.
Like she wants it to make maximum noise.
Yeah.
Either that or she'll bang the blinds against the window. She'll be like, whack, 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 whack,
wake
whack,
up.
Whack. Yeah, wake she does up. That a lot too. She's like, this is not acceptable.
Yeah.
She's like funny as hell. But so hopefully you guys enjoyed the show last night. I feel like I felt good about that show. I mean, I feel good about most of our shows, but at least I didn't get...
You weren't too sloshed.
I wasn't too sloshed, and like I covered everything I wanted to cover. And shit like that. You know, actually, after the show was over last night, we actually had yet another drink, and we watched Coming to America.
Yeah. I had to touch up on that, because T said, next week, she reminded me that next week the new one's coming out.
Yeah, so part two's coming out.
The movie held up well over the decades. As ancient as that movie is, it still looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it since I was in my 20s, probably.
Had some good matte shots. Back in Wakanda. No, it's not Wakanda. What was the name? It's like Wakanda. What's the name? Where was it? Zamunda. Yeah, it's fucking hilarious. They're talking and fucking lions and tigers are running by the windows and shit. Elephants,
zebras.
And shit, and zebras. Just all these fucking animals running by the windows.
I liked
talking.
That a lot of the jokes, there was a lot of kind of over-the-top zany jokes, but I liked that a lot of the gags were kind of subtle, or they weren't really, you know, focused on. I thought that was, I had forgotten about that.
What was funny is that I forgot that it was a rom-com.
That is very funny that you forgot that.
Yeah, I just thought of it as an Eddie Murphy movie, you know? But seeing it again, I was like, man, this is a romantic comedy. You know? But it was pretty cool. I liked it.
Yeah, so now we're all ready to see the new one when it comes out.
Yeah.
Which I think it's next weekend. I think they're adding it. So we'll see how
I'll
goes.
See it.
But you can watch it.
Cast and everything.
You can watch it on Amazon Prime for free. Plus, there's a bunch of other like Eddie Murphy movies on there, too. I think Trading Places was on there.
Yeah.
Vampire in Brooklyn was on there.
I forgot that the two guys from Trading Places had a damn cameo in
I had forgotten that as well.
Yeah.
So it's in the shared universe.
Yeah. they were bums sleeping on the side of the road fucking what's his name? Prince what? Prince
Who, Eddie Murphy's character?
Yeah, his character is called Prince.
Akeem, I just said it three
Akeem.
Times.
Yeah, Akeem. Prince Akeem. Gave him a big wad of cash. And they were, we're back in the game. Look. And they had enough money to start an investment, start business again. That was pretty good.
Fourth Floor Down says, Joe Louis was 137 years old. Yeah, that's what I was talking about. All those barbershop conversations were really fucking funny. I forgot how fucking funny that shit was.
Yeah.
All right. So even though we're probably like about 7 years late on this.
Yeah.
But whatever. So True Detective... I had heard about it around the periphery, heard about, like, it won all these Emmys, it won a BAFTA, it won, like, all these awards, so I'd always heard about how brilliant it was, and I just had never got around to watching it. I don't know, I guess because we don't have HBO, and so I missed out on a lot of stuff. Like, I haven't seen The Wire, I haven't seen anything like that, which sucks, and I really should get around to it one of these days, because, you know, everybody talks about it, and it's, you know, and I just missed out on a lot of cultural shit, I guess. But Sophie sent us the first season of this, and we actually sat down and watched it. It took us two nights, right? I think we watched like half of, like four of them, and then four of them the next night.
Yeah, the Blu-ray's got three discs in it, and I think it's three episodes per disc, I think.
Well, no, I think... Well, wait a minute.
Yeah, it was 3, 3, and 3, wasn't it?
Well, no, I think... Well, hang on.
Yeah.
Well, there's only 8 episodes, though, in total.
Maybe the second one only had 2.
Yeah, maybe episodes. The second one only has, but I can't remember.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty sure
we... It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't
matter. The Blu-ray set is real nice. All the loading screens and the way it's set up. You can even, ask to see recaps from the, you know what I mean, from... Like a recap from the last episode in case you forgot something. Real good score. The design, the graphic design behind the movie and on the loading screens and on the Blu-ray is fucking fantastic.
Oh my God, and that opening sequence is amazing.
Yeah, and really the strong point of this series, well, the acting's great. Matthew McConaughey and fucking, what's his name? Damn, dude from...
Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson, man. They just knock it out of the park in this fucking movie. These characters are just perfect for them. And the writing is really good. It's about two hard-boiled detectives from... they were from CID, which is like State Police Intelligence, or State Police Investigative Body for Louisiana. And, having lived in Louisiana and fucking done some support for fucking at the state police level, they nailed it. This is exactly the way those guys are. And even with all the foibles and the fucking... They're human, too. They do stupid shit. Casting was great because all the supporting cast was recruited from Louisiana. So they got the Louisiana fucking accents and some of the shit they just fucking nailed, some of it. I mean, McConaughey's not from Louisiana. He's from fucking Texas, I think, right?
Or well, he was from Texas in the show, too.
He's lived all over the place. So he's not... He's considered to be like an outsider. They think he's fucking weird because he's too deep. But when you look at him, you just got to see the movie. Harrelson's fucking great. He's just like a local good old boy type detective who gets into a shit ton of trouble with women. He just can't keep it in his pants. But it's kind of hard to blame him because those women were hot, man. The ones who were coming after him. He kept cheating on his wife and getting busted and shit. It was fucking just a great series, you know. They're trying to track down this serial killer. And it's kind of a... I don't want to spoil too much of it. It's kind of like he's a serial killer that has a religion. And there must be a group of them. And it's kind of like something out of Midsommar. Or, maybe like Wicker Man. And it's kind of a Louisiana interpretation of it, you know. Like an old tribal throwback religion shit happened out in the woods, sacrificing women and children and shit, doing weird stuff with them. And there's some kind of conspiracy going on. It's not just one guy, it's a whole bunch of them. And it goes across their career, different time periods. And in the last half, the second half of the series, they've already... Well, actually, it's not linear. They're doing a lot of flashbacks and flash forwards. It's hard to tell exactly what time frame everything's happening in. You have to watch their hair and see how old they are at any time. But eventually they leave the force and they start their own private investigation company, trying to crack that old case that they never really felt comfortable. You know, they didn't think they solved it, which turns out they did. But just real good series, man. It's almost on par with that first couple seasons of... Remember the one about ancient Rome? Spartacus?
Yeah.
The first couple seasons of Spartacus, how good that was.
Wait, was it called Spartacus? Yeah, I guess
yeah,
so.
Yeah, Spartacus. That was
really
good.
A long time ago.
I want to see that one again.
Well, that was the one where, like, the main actor, like, after the season one, he died or something, like, really young, and they had to get a different guy.
And it never recovered. The writing wasn't as good. It just kind of...
I kind of feel like that happens. Like, okay, so True Detective... One, I love that this is an anthology series. I haven't seen 2 or 3. I feel like the first season, this one that we watched, was the one that got all of the praise. Everybody loved season 1. Season 2 and 3 were more mixed. But I like that they were kind of self-contained in the sense that it was a totally different cast, totally different story, shit like that, which in a way kind of worked to their advantage because they could get bigger, like, A-list actors, because you didn't have to commit to being in a series that might, for all you know, run for fucking 8, 9, 10 seasons, and you'd be obligated, you know what I mean? You couldn't make movies or anything. So he said, you know, this is going to be, like, 8 episodes. It's a standalone story. I think it only took, like, 3 months to shoot it, you know, so they could get kind of, like, bigger actors. And I think that Matthew McConaughey, he was the one that they mainly wanted, and he actually, I think they wanted him to play the other role. They wanted him to play Marty, but he came forward. He said, no, 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 I want to play Cole. You know, I want to play that guy, because he really wanted to get into that dude's head. The, you know what I think makes this show, I mean, I loved every single fucking thing about this show. Every single thing. I can't think of a, I can't think of a single thing I did not like about this show. It was just, I love the way they took something that was kind of like, you know, the buddy cop, like two cops and they don't get along and they're trying to find like this weird serial killer with like all these, with all this weird like iconography and stuff. It's like not a super original idea. It's been done a lot of times before, but the way that they did, it's like the fucking character work and everything, because it seemed like the shit about the serial killer and all that was almost kind of like, it was, I don't want to say it was background, but it was kind of like not the most important thing. I mean, the most important thing was their characters, like their character arcs, and kind of the whole like thematic thrust of the show. There was like so much fucking shit going on here. It's like somebody just mentioned, it's like you really have to watch this like a whole bunch of times to pick everything up. Now, one of the things that I did pick up, there's a lot of like religious metaphors, like especially like a whole Jesus thing going on at the end. Was all of the stuff about the serial killer and Carcosa and the Yellow King and everything. Well, I recognize that because, you know, I'm a horror nerd. So I was like, oh, Robert W. Chambers wrote a short story collection back in the late 1800s, I want to say 1895, something like that, called The King in Yellow. And that's what they're referencing. Now, I think he was referencing an earlier story by Ambrose Bierce where they mentioned Carcosa. So it's a whole thing. And then H.P. Lovecraft picked up on the Robert Chambers thing and used that in some of his shit as well. So this is kind of like a whole Lovecraftian kind of shit going on there. And then you have like this whole philosophical shit going on too, like with this whole thing about like pessimism and, you know, existentialism, like the meaning of life and everything. And like the two of them, the two of them having their conversations about like their completely different worldviews.
Like a poop, no poop.
What are,
she's jumping up here?
No, don't step on it.
Yeah.
Don't step on it. Just stay there.
Pull her down.
Just stay there.
Okay.
Come here, little.
She's trying.
She's gonna fight.
Yeah, she's trying to.
Hey, what you doing, little to one?
Get attention.
She's trying to be
very hyperactive today.
Yeah, she's very, very hyperactive today. I'm not really sure why, but yeah, so just like, I just loved like all the, you know, kind of weird here. Hang on to her for a second. Like all those kind of references, it was just like so, I don't know, just, and just like the conversations they have, like they're too, like I said, they're too opposing, I guess, the way they looked at life or whatever. And then Matthew McConaughey going through this whole thing and almost kind of like having a conversion, or what they would call like a Road to Damascus moment or something like that, like at the end with all the Jesus iconography and stuff. I mean, it's just so fucking great. And I think one of the things that makes this awesome is that the dude who nowadays they would call the showrunner, Nick Pizzolatto, he actually first conceived this as a novel, right? And after he wrote it, he was kind of like, well, I think this would work better, you know, as a TV series, just because of, you know, it going back and forth in time. And he just thought it was like, you know, the visuals would be really cool. So he tried to get it, you know, for a TV series. And eventually there was a bidding war, because I guess it was like a lot of people wanted it. And I think HBO gave him like $4 or $4.5 million per episode to do 8 episodes. And another thing that's awesome is that he didn't have a writing staff, because you know how mostly shows, TV series are written by a bunch of writers. You know what I mean? They have a writing room and it's like they're all in there. They come up with ideas, bounce them off each other. Nick Pizzolatto did not want to do that. He's basically like, well, I just don't think I have a vision for what I want this show to be. And I don't want a bunch of, you know, I don't want a writing staff. I just want this to be like a novel and I want to do it. So it was just him and the director. He didn't have a staff. He just like wrote it by himself. And so I think that that made it a lot more focused and a lot more, you know, it was much more one person's vision. You could really, really see that. Also, love the whole aesthetic of it. They shot it on 35 millimeter because he wanted it to look more like a film. Like, you know what I mean? I think originally they were supposed to shoot it in Arkansas. But then because Louisiana has all those kind of tax breaks and shit like that for filming there. And also he really liked the whole like decadent landscapes and everything because it was kind of like a reflection of the moral shit of the characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they captured the Louisiana white trash dynamic.
That oh, yeah, big time.
In certain areas. I mean, that's it. That's it right there.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes it's a little, you know, it's got horror elements, so it's over the top on certain parts. But, you know, you can tell what's real and what isn't real.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, I don't know, it was just so fucking great. And everything, the two of them, when they, like, the conversations they had was great. Even when Matthew McConaughey's character was just, like, monologuing, it was great. Everything about this was just, like, so compelling. Like, all the characters were so compelling. You know, the mystery was kind of compelling. But even if it wasn't, you just wanted to watch these characters and see how shit was going to happen.
Yeah, the main bad guys, they kind of stood out. Real good acting. Everybody was great acting. The locals that they got in, you know, because the accents, it's hard to fake that accent. But then the two, I don't know if the two... black detectives were from Louisiana, but I bought it that they were. I mean, they got the accent and the mannerisms down. It was great because Rusty, who's played by McConaughey, is fucking doing a... This is supposed to be happening in the future, you know? He's no longer a cop. His hair is all long, and he's got this scraggly white trash mustache and shit. And they're... ask him about, you know, his old case, and a lot of times he's bullshitting and lying through the whole thing, and he's just talking and telling all these stories, just trying to, just charming the hell out of these damn detectives, and they're just sitting there listening to him, you know, tell this whole story, and they fucking fool you because they're kind of shucking and jiving, you know, letting him talk, you know, they're kind of Amos and Andy-ing him. Until fucking, you know what I mean? Like, to make him think that they're buying all this shit. And this goes on for, like, what? 4 episodes?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, just boom, they pounce on him. And they just come out as, like, fucking real competent detectives. Like, oh, you forgot we were detectives. This is an interrogation, you know? And you bullshitting us, you know? Fucking, we know, but this and that. They wouldn't show him the fucking case that they had. He got flustered, pissed off, and walked out. You know, they threatened to damn, get a search warrant to look at his storage unit and everything. And it was just like, that was the first time you see it from those two supporting characters, because you're just thinking that he's pushing them over, that they're just pushovers. Nah, they were just waiting to pounce. They had built a whole case up against him in their heads and everything. Ah, you forgot we were fucking investigators. I love that, that when they turned the tables on him like that. That was a great scene.
I was going to mention, yeah.
Because they had me believing that they were weak detectives.
Yeah.
Through that, you know.
I was going to mention, too, that the director actually, like, followed around a bunch of Louisiana police detectives.
Like.
Yeah, like, hung out with them for a really long time while they were working on this show. But, yeah, I was just, I'm just really, really glad, even though, like I said, I'm 7 years late, that I got around to seeing this, because I didn't realize that... I don't know. I don't really know what my perception was. I just remember a lot of people talking about it. I remember everybody talking about how amazing it was, and I was just kind of like, oh, it's probably like a true crime thing. It's like, I'll probably get around to it one of these days, and I just never did because, you know, I love that kind of shit. But I didn't realize, like, how fucking layered it would be, how much it had kind of taken, you know, the tropes of true crime TV shows, like buddy cop kind of stuff, and just used it to sort of, like, explore all these, like, kind of deep philosophical themes. And then it, you know, it almost kind of had, like, a little bit of a Lovecrafty type of shit going on.
Yeah.
And like I said, just the whole aesthetics of it, amazing. That opening sequence is just, like, gorgeous. I mean, so like I said, I'm a graphic designer, so it's, like, all that kind of stuff just just makes me go squee, you know what I mean? Because that stuff is so beautiful. And it's like, I love, and I think it's that won a bunch of awards too, like the opening sequence. I loved like the opening song, which was by the Hanson family. And it's like some good fucking music in there. I saw the Grinder Band was in there over the closing credits. I think I heard some Captain Beefheart in there. But yeah, that was like a bunch of cool shit. They said that they didn't really want to use, they figured like once they moved the production to Louisiana, because like I said, originally they were intending to do it in Arkansas. They said, well, we didn't really want to do, you know, a score that was kind of like what you would expect from Louisiana, like, you know, swamp blues or something like that. We wanted to do something a little bit different. So they used kind of like a lot of different kinds of music. I think there was some Wu-Tang Clan in there at some point. But yeah, so it had such a great like aesthetic thing, like all its own. It was like so cinematic, and it reminded me a little bit of Seven in a way, but a lot better. You know what I mean? Like, I love Seven, but it definitely had that same kind of quality about it. You know what I mean? Where it was just kind of exploring these larger themes of like light, dark, good, evil, that type of stuff. You know, all Nietzschean kind of stuff and all that, you know.
Yeah, and his partner was telling him, shut up. People around here don't talk that way. You know? So that's true. Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, they do not like any of even parts of Florida. They don't like any of that intellectual bullshit.
We don't like any of that smarty pants, atheistic type of stuff. Intellectual
bullshit, yeah. That's just considered false. That's fake.
Even though I have to say, I mean, I know that Matthew McConaughey was kind of portrayed as like a very, very pessimistic, a very damaged character because, you know, like I said, his daughter had died and he just had kind of come to a point in his life where he just thought there was, you know, nothing had any meaning, you know, and he was just like completely, you know, a materialist and a pessimist and everything. But I have to say that his character really kind of resonated with me because a lot of stuff that he said was the same kind of way that I think, you know what I mean? I'm not that depressed or anything or that nihilistic, but a lot of shit he said like really resonated. So I really, really liked that character. And it was just very, very funny to me that him and Woody Harrelson would be like in the car and like Matthew McConaughey would be like talking about his thing. And like Woody would just be like looking at him like, shut the fuck up. Yeah. It's just, I loved that dynamic.
If anybody actually knows what that structure was at the end of the series, you can drop it in the comment section. At the very end, when he finds the Yellow King, is that the name that he went by? Yellow King?
Yeah.
Once they find him, he runs down into some kind of a brick construction. It was semi-buried. It looked like a stables, but it was kind of buried. And I'd never seen anything like that in Louisiana or in Mississippi. I don't know if that was an old 1800s waterworks or what. But I didn't know if that was maybe the old-fashioned water department. It was really there. It wasn't a set.
As far as I know, they shot the whole thing in Louisiana, so it must have been some sites that they found.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. It looked kind of like a horse stable in a way, but it was buried. But it was open at the top, but it was down in there.
Thank you, Mango.
Thanks, man.
Just kick Cthulhu in the nards.
Yeah.
Oh, like Sheila Ann was quoting from the show, I start drinking at noon. You don't get to interfere with that. See, I was like, I feel you, man. I feel you. I don't usually start drinking that early, but you know. Yeah. Grampthor's Hammer says it was a state park, an old military battery.
Okay.
All right. We were wondering about it when we were watching it because I was like, wow, that's a great location. Right. I wonder where that is. Because, you know, you lived in Louisiana for a while.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't see anything like that there. It was just some buried military facility, I guess. It's definitely 1800s.
Yeah.
By looking at the bricks and just the architecture. It looked cool. It was kind of semi-buried. Had the damn dome ceiling in one spot with a hole in the top of it. I don't know, you know.
It's crazy to me how, even though I guess, I mean, I'm assuming because they were initially going to shoot it in Arkansas, that's what the original script had. So it's amazing to me that once they decided to shoot it in Louisiana became a character of its own. You know what I mean? It was just kind of like, it was so Louisiana, and it just like seeped into every single thing.
Yeah.
And I just love, like I said, I love the way they used the environment, like, you know, the outside shots and shit like that to kind of reflect what everybody was going through, like everyone's feelings and
it's
stuff.
It's even worse than here in terms of like moss and fucking mildew and mold and heat and humidity. It's pretty bad, you know.
Yeah.
It gets hot and humid. And they have real swamps there with the damn knees sticking up out of the trees, and it's just stinks in certain areas, you know, at certain times of the year, because just fucking swamps, they don't smell good at all, you know. So it's like Dagobah.
Yeah.
Hot, real hot and humid.
Yeah, Grampians Hammer says Fort Macomb State Historic Park.
Okay. Fort Macomb.
Fort Macomb.
Yeah, Fort Macomb. All right. It looked cool. That's where the serial killer was hiding. He had it all decked out in little twigs and shit.
I like, too, that even though this was... It's a standalone. Like, the 8 episodes are standalone. Like I said, there's 3 seasons, but the other 2 are, like, completely different stories and completely different cast. So, I like... I think when this first came out, I feel like a lot of people complained... Not complained, but they were kind of like, oh, they were expecting there to be, like, some twist ending, or they were expecting some this, that, and the other. But I kind of like the way... This has a lot of... like, little bit fantastical elements, a little bit, because, you know, Rust has, you know, he says that because of all the drug use, because he, you know, been undercover, and he'd been using all the drugs for, like, a really long, like, 4 years.
Trails and shit.
And so he can see things, like, and he has these weird visions and shit. So there's, like, a little bit of that in there, but I really kind of like the way they kept everything other than that really, really grounded. And they kind of left everything... They didn't leave everything hanging. They did wrap everything up. But I really liked the way they wrapped everything up just, like, in a realistic way. Like, not... It didn't end up like some of these kind of crime, true crime, or cop kind of movies end up with, like, oh, we caught the bad guy and everything's good now. It's like, it kind of ends like that, but...
They didn't catch everybody.
There's still...
And they said that's just the way it is.
And that's just kind of the way it is. And I really, really like that they kind of... I don't know. Like, I really like the way they balanced the pessimism.
I thought it was a good cop flick. What do you think, Danny? I thought it was a real accurate cop flick. And they did have... I'm pretty sure that was a some paranormal events had happened in it. I think, you know, he was kind of in touch with his kind of fucking... what do you call it? Collective unconscious, his inner, you know, his, he kind of had, he had a little bit of psychic ability. When he went down into that fort where the Yellow King was a serial killer, for a second he looked up and he saw a damn vortex in space kind of whirling around in there like a doorway into another dimension. He saw it for just a few seconds, and they show it to you, but it faded away because he got hit.
Yeah,
I think it was there.
Maybe. I mean, this really did have a little bit of a cosmic horror type of sprinkling on top of it, which I really dug. I liked that.
You have to think about this. This was a group of powerful people that had been doing these human sacrifices on children for a long period of time. You know, at least 100 years, right? Isn't that basically what they were saying?
Well, yeah, because it was like generational, was it not?
Yeah. So they weren't doing it for nothing. They must have been getting something out of it.
Yeah.
And they moved up in society into places of power and wealth, supposedly. And not really proven, but it probably did. They were doing it for a long period of time for a reason. That vortex had something to do with it.
Yeah, maybe they really had kind of summoned something.
They had summoned something.
Yeah, some kind of elder god type of shit.
Some kind of a portal to another dimension, you know, into the spirit world. And I liked how they didn't give you any details about what it was.
Well, because he went
off... Wasn't on you.
Rust goes off on a couple of times. He talks about, like, M-brain theory and, like, some kind of, you know, stuff that was kind of current at the time in physics.
And when he would get a lead, he would go, this is it. And when he showed up, when he found that house, he goes, this is the place. This is it.
Yeah, he had, like,
He had an inner voice.
Yeah.
So, no, he was a... You would call him a psychic. Yeah, I don't think that's a good... word. I think that's a woo type of word.
Yeah.
It's just some people can hear an inner voice that tells them this way, that way, yes, no, that kind
yeah,
of shit.
Yeah, he just had intuition. He had intuitions. Right. He was intuitive.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and that's why he was kind of one of the best ones. And they said that, like, right. they established it in the first, you know, when they first find the body of Dora Lang. And he had all these kind of feelings about it.
Yeah.
Well, hi, Polk. What you doing? She's like, I'm going to go over here. You guys are not paying attention to me. But
they're
yeah,
saying,
so
they're
what?
Saying season three. Louis is saying season three is even better.
Really?
Have to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I looked at the
Mangler
thing.
Says he agrees.
I looked at the thing, and it seemed like 2 and 3 got a lot more mixed reviews than 1 did. I mean, 1's pretty much like universally loved, and 2 and 3 were kind of like, eh. Some people liked it, some people hated it. You know, I don't think. I think what ended up happening was that I think they had, you know, the first season was just Nick Pizzolatto. You know, he was the sole writer on it. So it was just like basically his vision, like him and the director. I think they got more writers later. He was the writer on all of them as far as I can determine. But I think they did have, he did have more of like a writing staff maybe on the later ones. And I think people didn't like that as much.
Somebody said that the ending sucked. I don't think it did though. Hey, will you stop it? She's gonna knock that over.
Uh-oh.
Pookie, okay. Stop being bad.
Oh my goodness. Damn. She is being such a brat today.
No, I thought the ending was good because it didn't answer all the questions, which in reality, that's you wouldn't have all the questions answered.
And it was like, kind of like wrapped up both of their character arcs, you know what I mean? It kind of, I think there was a little bit of, particularly in maybe the atheist community, because they were kind of like, oh, we, you know, we really liked Rust's character, that he was like this big pessimistic, like, you know, materialist atheist. You don't see a lot of that, you know, what? You don't see a lot of that, like, portrayed.
Hey, you're being bad. Get down. Get down. There you go.
And so they kind of thought the end, where it's almost seemed like like he was kind of like, oh, you know, I believe in God now, or I believe in an afterlife now, or something like that, which, you know, that's kind of like a, you know, glib way of putting it.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people didn't really like that. But I don't know. I don't know if that's entirely... I think it was more a sense of, like, he came to a place where he could hope again. You know what I'm saying?
They're defending season 2 also.
And, I mean, well, yeah. It's like, I definitely want to see season 2 and season 3 now.
Yeah.
But yeah, just this whole, like I said, this first season, I just loved everything about it. And it's just, I can see why everybody was just,
would you stop it?
This ended up like, oh, it froze.
Okay.
It froze.
It didn't freeze here.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we should like,
yeah, it's been...
yeah, we've been going for a while.
Yeah,
maybe we should just stop it.
Just stop it up and wrap it up.
All right, yeah. We will be back tomorrow. So thanks, everybody, for dropping by. We're losing the stream. So, yeah, we'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye.